Hello, everyone. This is Jeff Horwich, and we have something kind of interesting for the podcast today. Let me give you the briefest setup that I can. While In the Loop, the big, you know, show in front of a live audience, hour-long thing, is kind of on break. We're trying to raise some money. We're doing various projects in the meantime, trying to kind of find our place in the world. That is to say, Sandon Totten, my producer, and myself, we're the staff that continues full-time on In the Loop. And among those things, we had a concept the other day for a weekly, roughly half-hour show that would kind of wrap up the week's events and cast us forward into the next week, kind of trying to pull out the big themes in the news from that week. It would kind of sound like In the Loop, but it wouldn't be the same as In the Loop. We'd be doing it from a studio and all kinds of other things and trying to create something we could actually build on a weekly basis with really just two people. So we made a pilot, as often happens. We have to make a demonstration version for internal consumption for our bosses to sort of give a sense of the kind of stuff we might do and what it might sound like. So what we have for you on the podcast today, this is the point of this long introduction, is that pilot. It didn't go out on the radio, and in fact, as I'm giving it to you now, you know, it's probably about a week old in terms of the content, but it's still relevant, still interesting, and we thought we'd go ahead and share it with our podcast listeners, because the hope is that in the next couple weeks, we move ahead and we start doing these regularly, putting them out on the air on Friday afternoons. Friday evenings is the intended slot, and putting them out on the podcast as well. Again, it's not In the Loop so much as it is sort of a kind of way to keep In the Loop alive and let us stretch some different muscles in the meantime. Three quick notes about this pilot I'm about to play. First, it is a pilot. We're just trying some things out. What ultimately, you know, comes out in the wash might sound a little bit different than some of what you're going to hear right now, but sort of let you inside our process and share this with our closest listeners. Second thing, we gave this pilot show a name. We called it Underscore. And in fact, I think we might ditch the whole Underscore thing as we move ahead with this in the next couple of weeks. But if you hear Underscore, that's because that's the little name we came up with it, just to try it out. And the third thing is there's an interview in the middle. We talk about the economy with a guy who's down in North Carolina. And at the time, he wasn't sure if his company would be able to give him clearance to do the interview. So I said, let's just go ahead and do it. And if your company gives you clearance afterward, then we'll know that we can go ahead and use it. Well, in the end, we didn't get that clear guidance from his company as to whether he could go ahead. So to solve that problem and still be able to play the interview for you, we're just going to bleep his name. And the only reason we're bleeping it is because we haven't gotten the full go-ahead from his company for him to, you know, do an interview as himself. So we'll bleep it. Anyway, that's it. Thanks for listening to all of this gobbledygook setup. And see what you think of this. Give us your feedback. We'll be folding that into the way this idea evolves as we roll it out, I hope, in the next few weeks. From Minnesota Public Radio's In the Loop, this is our look at the threads and trends running through the news this week. What's been on our minds, what have we learned, and what is ahead? With all that in mind, we're calling this little capsule Underscore. I'm Jeff Horwich. Coming up in the next 25 minutes, the economy turns downright depressing, and politicians lay out their policy-based personal ads for the American public. We'll also talk with an athlete contemplating a more politically charged Olympics after the Tibet crackdown. First, though, the news coming out of Iraq this week made kind of a change in course. Watching the usual stream of headlines, the overall feeling that you get right now is backsliding. Renewed militia violence in Baghdad, new curfews in place, the Iraqi army struggling for control of Basra, which is a major city in the south, and we just passed America's 4,000th military death in Iraq. All this after it seemed like things were actually going pretty well for a while there. There's a duplex in Superior, Wisconsin, where they watch these developments as closely as any house you'll find. Sergeant First Class Troy Smith owns the place, and he shares it with four other Iraq veterans. Troy, thanks very much for joining us to talk a little bit about what's going on.
Thank you for having me. It is a pleasure to be here this morning.
You brought three of your housemates along with you, I think, and crowded everybody into our studios up in Duluth. Why don't we just go around, the rest of you. Give us your name and your rank, if you could.
My name is Specialist Aloysius Huss.
Specialist Andy Kosovich.
My name is Senior Airman Damian Furtman.
So how did you guys all come to be living in the same house, the Plex, as you call it, right?
You know, the story of the Plex is pretty unique. It's kind of been the story of the National Guard. You know, different people rise up from different locations. they serve, and in the meantime, they meet some really interesting people and a family. And it's been through that medium that we've all kind of gotten together. And
we were kind of imagining like how the sitcom theme song would go.
Oh, it's definitely reminiscent of Cheers as people come in. If you're an outsider, it may seem weird, but we love it.
Is there a change in mood around the house depending on the stream of news coming out of Iraq?
This is Troy. I would say a little bit. I have yet to meet a soldier or sailor or airman or marine that hasn't come back from serving overseas that does not have a general loathing of the media coverage.
This is Al. It just sometimes bothers me when I was over there and we did get the news and everything, and you'd be sitting there and watching some news station from back home, and they'd start to talk about something, and you'd realize, hey, I was there doing that, and that's not how it went down.
So when I say, like I did in the introduction, that as we look over sort of the arc of news this week, definitely there was a much darker tone to it. Does that register with you guys at all? Does it matter at all what one week of news tells us about what's going on in Iraq?
This is Damien. Honestly, I really don't pay a lot of attention to the news because of the slant that's thrown in on it. So I just talk to people I work with and my friends that are over there at the time.
Now, I'd say that if we look at the month of time before this past week, the news was pretty good. We were hearing things like, you know, the surge seems to finally be working. People are coming out on the streets again in Baghdad. The vibe that those of us watching and listening to and reading the news were feeling was much more positive than it had been. Did that strike you?
I would concur that comments were made that the surge, quote unquote, appears to be working or may be working. I never saw the positive. The surge is working. This is a good thing. This is the first step of us giving these people back their country and getting out. It was always, tainted with that speculative unsureness of maybe working, appears to be working.
Inside the house, inside the Plex, do you guys ever disagree about the war? Do you have heated discussions about it?
This is Andy. We all have pretty similar beliefs about it, but it's like when we bring over somebody else that's outside of it, that's when the arguments can start.
As a matter of fact, Damien, I think you're the subject matter expert on that one.
Tell me what happened.
I'd rather not.
Jeff, Damien lost a relationship over that issue. So.
Oh, a romantic relationship.
He's saying change topic, so moving on to the next question.
It's a sore point, but talk to me in general maybe then about how that can happen. You know, does your opinion, your experiences about what's happening in Iraq, do those get in the way of your other personal relationships?
It can if you let it, but the way I see it is I just try not to talk about it to someone that hasn't been over there. What they know is only what they've seen or heard in the news.
Don't you want to help them understand?
You can try to help them understand, but a lot of people I know are so stubborn in the fact that the news is right, this is what's going on, so they stick to that, and it's hard to persuade them to be like, no, it's not really like that.
You know, I think we could probably all agree, whether you're for the war or against the war, that we're in for a pretty long engagement here. When is enough enough when it comes to the war in Iraq? What kind of circumstances would it take for you guys to decide, as many other people in the country have, that for some reason it's not worth sticking it out?
I don't feel that would be an option to pull out there right now because, or any time until the problems are solved there, because once that happens, you know, that country will probably tear itself apart. Could become a big breeding ground for the terrorist cells and everything else. So it's a good thing that we're staying there, and I believe we should stay there until our job's done.
It sounds like it's very hard to imagine any circumstance in which pulling out would be something you'd be comfortable with.
As soldiers, when you put your life on the line and you see some of your friends get hurt or maybe worse, you want to know that the outcome was part of something. I want to know that my experience and my time was part of, you know, the birth of democracy in the Middle East. And we want to see that progress. We want to see it. Basically, in the end of the day, I think we want to win.
Well, Damien, Andy, Al, and of course, Troy, thanks all of you for coming in and talking with us for a few minutes today.
Thanks for your time. Have a good day.
I'm Jeff Horwich, and you're listening to Underscore from In the Loop. Well, you might say this was the week we went from talking about recession to talking depression, or at least speculating about how close to the edge we might be. Now, a couple of weeks ago, out of the blue, one of our newsroom folks received a very detailed email explaining why, at any moment, the financial sector was about to go into a tailspin. That email came from Mike, who's a personal financial planner and wealth manager in Charlotte, North Carolina. Wouldn't you know, it wasn't maybe a few days later that the huge investment bank Bear Stearns kind of fell apart. And we've got the Federal Reserve jumping in with a rescue that's supposedly an example of what we might need to do to prevent a collapse of the entire economy. So since Mike was trying to flag us down on one of the biggest economic stories of the year, figured the least we could do was give him a call back after this week, which saw many of his predictions come true. So first of all, Mike, I'm sorry, we probably should have listened to you initially. Now we know you for the oracle that you are.
Well, I'm not sure what you could have done if you had have listened. I hoped it was not going to come, and I think that we are in a precarious position where there are a lot of things that have come together that produce probably the biggest threat to our economy in a long, long time, perhaps even going back to the Great Depression.
You subscribe to a view where maybe making metaphors of the Great Depression is realistic?
I think that there is a potential for global financial calamity if nothing is done to prevent it. I'm encouraged in the last week or two to see that at least it's getting the attention and getting some action from the Treasury of the United States and the Federal Reserve System.
Can the government be the hero here? I mean, that's been the other thread that's been running through is, U.S. government to the rescue. You believe
Absolutely. Ronald Reagan says when the government shows up and says, I'm here to help, you're supposed to run to the door.
Well, and folks in your line of work would tend to think that's exactly what you should do.
We don't like to see the government getting involved. We like to see the free markets operating and working their own problems out. But there are times when you have to do something that's politically unpopular, runs counter to your basic instincts. You have to help somebody, not because they deserve it, but because you have to help them in order to keep the system from suffering. And
do you buy this as a major philosophical shift in the financial community? All these folks who, a few months ago were complaining, for example, about Sarbanes-Oxley, get this extra regulation off my back, just let me do my thing. Now they're all big believers in the power of the U.S. government to set things right.
Well, I don't know that it's a philosophical shift as much as it is a reality check. You may not believe in something philosophically, but in the reality you're facing at this moment in time, you look at it from a pragmatic point of view. What is the cost of not doing something? What would it cost us to have a Great Depression in this country? And when you think in terms of the cost of calamity, then the cost of a solution seems sort of, reasonable by comparison.
So for the time being, anyway, everybody very pragmatically is looking at the government as a...
We can complain about the government getting off our back for the rest of our lives after this is over. There's a great precedent for this. It worked like a charm, which was the RTC, Resolution Trust Corporation, in the late 80s.
Savings and loan bailout situation.
Right. The savings, the 750 savings and loans were upside down, wrong side out in the late 80s. And if they had collapsed, it would have created just all sorts of economic problems, worldwide possibly. The financial institutions are allowed to keep the good loans. That's what happened. The S&Ls kept the good loans. The American taxpayers, through the RTC, took the bad loans. Financial institutions agreed to some regulation to prevent this from happening again, and the problem was solved.
Now, everybody knows about subprime mortgages. It's been, at least a year now that that term has been in the news, and people have begun to understand how important they are to the problems in the economy. What are the weaknesses that maybe aren't yet getting the banner headline treatment, that we should be thinking more about?
The biggest threat hanging over the markets right now, is, it seems to me at least, we have to go back to these insurance companies that insured the mortgage bonds. The same insurance companies that insured those are companies that also have insured $1 trillion worth, perhaps, of municipal bonds. Many of these bonds are owned by institutions or entities that can only own AAA rated. The insurance companies now have a problem. They're being viewed by the rating agencies, Standard & Poor's, Moody's, Fitch, and so on, very closely because they have taken on this additional risk. They started insuring these subprime loans in some cases, and the business has slowed down for them. They're not writing any more of that kind of insurance. They're under possible threat of losing their AAA ratings. Some of them already have. The biggest ones have not. if the biggest ones do, this could cause a massive sell-off of AAA-rated securities in a very short period of time, and that's what could cause an enormous amount of turmoil, at least, in the marketplace. Calamity may be a better word. I'm not sure.
The basic thing, to break it down for people, is that these insurance companies that insured all of these mortgage securities that have gone bad, they're also all wrapped up in the municipal bond market.
Right.
And without confidence in them, that market starts to crumble. Everybody's all tied up
right.
with everybody here.
Now, it's important to say that the cities are not in trouble. The counties and states that issued these bonds are not in trouble. But if the people who own them because they're AAA rated and can only own AAA rated bonds, then this massive sell-off creates an enormous problem, an enormous problem.
Do you think the media, the public, are they thinking about this at all? Are you seeing anything about it?
Not much, which may be a good thing. Maybe sometimes ignorance is bliss.
Well, temporarily anyway.
Thank goodness we've got the basketball tournaments going on this month.
That's right.
Give us some distraction and
focus
relief.
Focus on the NCAAs.
Yeah.
Have we got another fearful week ahead of us? Are we heading downhill even more in terms of our general public mentality, or can we start to lift our chins a bit?
I think we have a difficult period ahead of us. I think that the thing that can help more than anything else is if people start to think in terms of what is good for the nation, the world economy, as opposed to, you know, the attitude of, well, let them go down the drain. You know, the banks, hell, they got themselves into this mess, let them get out of this mess, or poor Mrs. Jones is going to lose her house. Well, I'm sorry. I think we've got to accept the fact that if somebody made a mistake, got in over their head, loses their house, goes back to the apartment they were in before, that's not a disaster. A Great Depression is a disaster. I don't want to seem totally insensitive to anyone who's in trouble with their mortgage or who has difficult financial results from this. But what is, and we've got to work on solving it and trying to learn something from it so it doesn't happen again.
Well, Mike, thank you very much for your perspective.
You're welcome.
Mike is a financial planner and personal wealth advisor in Charlotte, North Carolina. He works for a major regional investment firm in the Southeast. Now, the collapse of Bear Stearns and the turmoil that followed had an immediate effect on the presidential race. In a matter of days, all three major candidates staged a big speech to lay out their plan, their philosophy, what kind of president they would be in this situation. Behind the policy prescriptions, you get a real sense of the essence of the person. It was almost like the political equivalent of a personal ad to the American voter.
Thank you for calling the Presidential Personals, where all the hottest people come to brush up on federal policy proposals. To start listening to Presidential Profiles, press 1.
Hi, I'm John. I'm 71. But don't let that fool you. My friends, I've got the body of a 62-year-old. Let's see, I'm into straight talk. You know, when it comes to economics, my friends, I just like to go with the flow. Live and let live, my friends, that's my motto. Look, I'm a nice guy. You can tell because I'm smiling all the time. But if you get yourself into some kind of trouble, my friends, I don't care if you're a big old bank or Joe Blow trying to pay the mortgage. My friends, I'm not going to run in and bail you out. After all, right? Nobody bailed me out when it mattered. Look, my friends, I know this sounds harsh, but if we're going to start seeing each other, I want you to know this going in. I'm all about tough love. The flip side, my friends, is that you can pretty much go ahead and do your thing. I'm okay with an open relationship. Anyway, my friends, I guess that's about it. If you're interested, I'm John.
To hear your next presidential profile, press 2.
Hello there. My name's Hillary. And you know what? I'm just going to say it right off the bat. I'm a doer, a real go-getter, a woman of action. And if you're not up for that, well, you'd better go find someone who's prepared to just stay home and bake cookies, because that's not me. When it comes to the economy, let me tell you, it's time to start doing some stuff. Convening people, passing laws, grabbing control. I'm talking about the government buying up foreclosed houses, registering all mortgage brokers with the government. The government backing up mortgages that are in trouble. I've even got some government plan to reduce carbon emissions through mortgage lending. It's an Al Gore thing. I don't know exactly how it's going to work, but it's going to be awesome. So if you're up for somebody with a lot of energy, who's not afraid to tell it like it is and tell you what to do, then I've got big plans for us. Oh, by the way, I'm already married, but he doesn't mind. Okay, hope to hear from you soon. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. No, thank you, thank you. To hear your next presidential profile, press 2.
Hello, my name is Barack. Tall, dark, handsome. Change, hope. Yes, we can. I want you to know that despite these inspiring single-syllable words, I'm a very practical man. I'm the kind of guy who likes to play it right down the middle. Sure, we'll go after the really bad guys. We'll help the little guys who are most in danger. We'll have some tax cuts. Not for everybody, just the middle class. And we'll increase regulation, but not too much. On economic policy, I might not be the most exciting man to ever enter your life, but I'm trying to be practical here. Is this getting you excited? Can we make beautiful love together? Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
To hear any of these profiles again, press 7. Or to continue listening for Mike Gravel and Ralph Nader, press pound.
You are listening to Underscore, a special production of In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. You know, it seems hardly a week goes by the media doesn't go out of its way to tell us something completely obvious about ourselves. In a now-and-then feature we'll call the Sherlock Holmes Award, we'll celebrate these examples of astute trend spotting. This week, we've got none other than the New York Times discovering that young people like to send links to each other. Here's our producer, Sandon, with a few more details.
Okay, basically, this ACE reporter unearthed a fact that is painfully obvious to anyone with an email account. In fact, it's been years since I got through a day without someone sending me a link to some stupid talking cat video or an article about the latest political sex scandal. Along with a handful of other insightful claims, like young people watch YouTube and The Daily Show, the article does point out something useful, namely this. Young readers find themselves going straight to the source, bypassing all of the context and analysis that seasoned journalists provide. Seriously, that's a quote. Seasoned journalists. Displaying his acute mastery of the obvious, the author notes that people have always shared stuff with each other. What astounds him, though, is that today's kids are much more likely to read things recommended by friends than something hand-picked by well-paid and highly educated journalists. He quotes one kid as saying, "If the news is that important, it'll find me." Well, my gut tells me that this article won't be finding that guy anytime soon.
That's our producer, Sandon Totten. Thanks, Sandon. We're headed into next week with the world really not sure quite what to do with itself following China's crackdown in Tibet. Now, that's piling on top of existing concerns about China's tie-ups in Sudan, and you've got people and governments around the world making an awful lot of noise, but still a real sense of ambivalence about what to actually do. Boycotting or otherwise targeting the Olympics would sting China, certainly, but a whole lot of other folks besides. People like Ben Quanley, who's an Olympic kayaker getting ready for Beijing. He's training down near Austin, Texas. And we kind of wondered if Olympians like him are feeling the same ambivalence about what is going on in Tibet. Ben, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How's your kayaking weather down in Texas?
Oh, man, it's been beautiful. That's why I live down here now.
Yeah, don't tell us too much about it up here in Minnesota. I'll ask the big question. How does an Olympic boycott sound to you right now?
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is I would hope that the boycott would be put kind of as a last resort. That being said, if the folks that, you know, really have the political willpower to get something done with this, if that's the choice that they make, I'm going to be behind them.
As you talk with other folks who are training for the games, do you feel like you're kind of an outlier in that regard?
I don't know. I've been to the Olympics, and now I coach kids every day, and I think that they would definitely be really sad if they didn't get to compete when they'd worked so hard to qualify for the games. But, you know, by the same token, I want them to know what's important in the world, and it isn't necessarily the gold medal. It's a lot more than that.
You don't resent the idea of politics and other global events getting tied up with the Olympics, which is really, let's face it, wherever it takes place, it's a sporting competition.
Well, you know, I mean, I feel like this is a very human institution, and I don't feel like it's tainted by the fact that there's conflict and turmoil about it. Very personally, as an athlete, there's a lot of conflict and turmoil every day, you know, in preparing for this event. It takes a lot of your life to even be in contention for one of these spots. But the fact of the matter is that if that's all that it's about, then, you know, I think that as athletes, we miss the point anyway.
So am I understanding you right? If athletes, you're saying, are not even really thinking about the political implications of what's going on here, they're not quite getting it in a full sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Olympics is much greater than us, and the most important part of the Olympics is that we learn to live well. If we can affect other countries to help their citizens to live well as well, that's what the Olympics is here for.
We just saw today the captain of India's soccer team was supposed to carry the torch on a leg, and he refused to do that because of what's going on in Tibet. Would you carry the torch at this point if you were asked?
Absolutely. I truly believe that the Olympics succeeds because it brings people together. You know, the reason that we have these kind of military conflicts and stuff is because we're men, and men kind of carry out these aggressive things, and, you know, sports is a great way to bring people together and carry out all that aggression and still be able to get together at the end of the day. And I think that's the beauty of how the Olympics works, you know.
So this is a way of relating to other countries that actually steps outside the political process.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just find that there's a very social element to the way that these leaders make decisions, and I've seen that in Guatemala. I'm originally from Guatemala, and I actually had to flee my home country because the place that I lived got taken over by guerrillas. 1996 was my first Olympics, and the leaders of the country literally ended the Civil War directly after the Olympic Games in 1996. You know, I got to spend some time with the leaders of Guatemala at that Games, where they went around and really wanted to represent the best of the country. And this Civil War was a big blight on Guatemala's history. And I think that they saw that and, as a result, opened their minds more to how to resolve that problem. And, you know, my hope is that folks like President Bush and the leaders of a lot of other countries going to China may have a positive impact on their viewpoints in terms of human rights and in terms of, you know, countries like Tibet.
Sounds like you might even think it's a little bit better in some sense to have chosen a location that might have a little political controversy attached to it.
Absolutely. I mean, if the Olympics can have a greater effect than just handing out a handful of medals, then I'm way behind that.
Ben, thanks very much for your time today.
You bet.
That is Ben Quanley. He's 33 years old and hoping to qualify to compete for the U.S. in an event called a two-person canoe in the 2008 Olympic Games. Before we go, we like to take the pulse of the political diversions that kept us all distracted this week. First, some political news that, in truth, probably distracted just about nobody. As a Democratic presidential candidate, Mike Gravel was having a hard time rising out of the single digit. So Gravel has switched now to the Libertarian Party, where evidently anyone is free to run. Midweek, the Associated Press rolled out some mind-blowing genealogical research. Turns out Barack is a distant cousin of Brad Pitt, and Hillary a distant cousin of Angelina Jolie. Hillary's also related to Alanis Morissette, while Barack has a long family connection to President Bush. Just how relevant is this? Some of these common ancestors we're talking about here date back to the 1600s. John McCain, it turns out, is related to George Washington. Closely related, in fact. Turns out they are brothers. But the political sideshow of the week had to be Snipergate, Hillary's harrowing account of landing in Bosnia under sniper fire. More like landing with Sinbad on a goodwill tour and walking across the tarmac to get a poem from an 8-year-old girl. Little different. We've been running a poll on our blog asking what really happened here. In first place,
she's been to over 80 countries. You can't expect her to remember which ones didn't have sniper fire.
And two answers are tied for second.
There was sniper fire, but they were aiming for Sinbad.
And?
Look, over there! Obama's making out with that real estate guy.
Keep those votes coming. Look for new polls and all kinds of great tidbits daily on our blog. It's called The Loophole. To learn more about this little show, underscore, and In the Loop, visit minnesotapublicradio.org/InTheLoop. We are produced by Sandin Totten and myself with Anna Wagle and Public Insight Journalism. We employed the voice talents today of Jackie Fuller and Linda Fanton, thanks to them, and got additional help from Bob Kelleher. All of our music comes from The Smarts. TheSmartsBand.com is their website. I'm Jeff Horwich. Have a great weekend. Marketplace is coming up next.